Welcome to Sports, Clips, and Politics. With your hosts, Ben Gusar and me, Sean Hill.
Welcome to episode 134 of Sports, Clicks, and Politics, a hump day edition of Sports, Clicks, and Politics. I am Sean Hannon, joined as always by the charming and handsome Ben Husong. Mr. Husong, how was your last couple weekends? Did you stock up on some chicken meds?
No, I haven't stocked up my chicken meds yet. I got to get that going, though. I'll tell you
what. I thought of you as soon as I saw that post, but...
These people are crazy. I know.
We're not going to get into that today as part of the topics. No, it's all right.
Yeah, but I might have to stock up on new chicken meds, antibiotics and such. Yeah. I'm going to level with you.
You guys can... Yeah, I don't know the whole story, but I saw the Tractor Supply Company post something about that antibiotics specifically, I think. I don't know if it's all meds, but at least antibiotics, we're going to have to be distributed or be have a... prescription? Is that what they do from vets?
Veterinarian prescription to get a chicken antibiotic now. Thank God the government's here to keep us safe.
It's because you heathen chicken farmers.
Hey.
Trying to poison us all or something. I don't know.
Me, yeah, with my seven chickens. Yes. Taking over the world, baby.
All right. Well, before we get into some of the crazy topics, we will do a little bit of recap of maybe some stuff we skipped because we missed a show last week. But before we get into that, please like and share the video. Subscribe to the channel. Leave us a 5-star rate and review on the podcast, and onward and upward on the Rumble channel here. So hopefully everybody is enjoying their hump day, their afternoon. We have some crazy stuff, even some local stuff that we actually kind of like a national / local.
Yeah.
With the migrants.
Yeah, a little over.
Hit home. Hit home right here, almost specifically. Another thing that hit home, let's jump right into this, I guess. Did you watch any of the PGA Championship?
I actually did.
Oh, well, good. I mean, we can maybe have an enlightened conversation as opposed to just, you know, like talking NBA stuff.
As long as we stick to like the 2 hours I was in and out for on Saturday, I'm your guy.
All right.
Well, on the PGA Championship this weekend.
Well, all right. So I don't know. What's a bigger story? I mean, I guess the biggest story is probably the Michael Block story.
That was my favorite story.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
sure.
I had Koepka in my DraftKings lineup, so I cashed, so I was happy.
Koepka, it turns out, is still really good at golf.
Yeah. I mean, I had him in the Masters, too, and he should have won that one, too. Like, he's literally on his game right now. He was very impressive to watch and didn't run away with it because Hovland kind of hung in there for a little bit until, you know, Hovland did Hovland things and kind of, what did he do? Did you see the shot that he hit into the sand trap? So I think this was like a hole 16 or 17. It was late in the round. Uh-huh. Maybe it was 15. I don't know. It was definitely late in the round where he was in a fairway bunker off his tee shot.
Okay.
Hit his next shot about 8 feet, plugged straight into the bunker. Like he had actually got a free drop because it was in the bunker wall or something.
Oh,
but
my
the drop
God.
Was still terrible, and then it all fell apart from there for him. But
so he just drilled the front of the bunker.
Went straight into
the stand.
Yeah. So it was over for him at that point. So I did pull up the Michael Block ace, so maybe we can listen to that. That was pretty fun. I got a little emotional.
Fun story.
Yeah, well, the story is crazy just in general, right? Obviously, he's a teaching pro. It's not like he's a PGA Tour. Even though he's tried to qualify for events, he's unsuccessfully done that a couple times. I think he shot a couple 80s somethings in the two qualifier. I think I looked at his two tournaments that he tried to qualify for, and he didn't shoot well. But different story when you get all the lights and the pressure and the media and all that stuff on him. Apparently, he got the clutch gene.
He shines.
Yeah. So, and obviously, this was unexpected, and it was a story that was kind of dominated the first couple rounds, other than the weather was being that on that Saturday. But this guy is basically playing the rounds of his life. I think he's like T10 or something. He's paired with Rory going into the last round. He's, you know, I say competing, but he wasn't having a great final round. And then all of a sudden he, let me pull it up. We can just watch it together here. So,
you know, every now and then your whole round turns around.
Yeah. Something like that. Let me see if I can fix the audio to make sure we're not echoing. I'll figure this out in 1 second. There we are. All right. So this is, do we know what hole this was? I think this was 15, actually. I can't remember when anyway. But anyway, so we're going to get Michael Block, PGA Championship. Now, the best part, he's playing with Rory. maybe an all-time, you know, an all-time great, right? I mean, what, you know.
For sure.
In a handful of people, you'd be like, okay, this is the guy, whatever.
One of the few golfers that non-golf people would know who he is. Absolutely,
right. And just as a quick note, you know, he married a girl from Rochester. So he's a member of Oak Hill. Oak Hill.
He's playing on his home course. He couldn't even win.
Does he ever been to Bellevue?
I have no idea.
He should. He gets a reciprocal.
You know, and, you know, all the Oak Hill guys can't wait to come out and play Bellevue. That is how it goes.
Maybe they should put him on the, what's the oldest golf league in the world that they're part of? The League of the Iroquois?
The League of the Iroquois.
Maybe they should bring in Rory. That would be hilarious. Awesome. That would be awesome. All right. Anyway, let's go back to Michael Black because this was pretty awesome anyway, Jeff.
All right.
Let me see if I can make this work for us.
Seconds ago. The fairy tale story gets better. A home run for Michael Black.
I think I did it.
Straight in the hole.
No way. No way. Rory, did it go in?
It sure did. Dumped it.
All right. Now, a couple things, and I'll play the video. At this point, even though he's asked a couple times, he still doesn't actually know that it's gone in. Asked Rory a couple times, did it go in? He's like, no. And then you can see him. He's still walking up the fairway of the and the crowd is cheering, and he's like, you know, pointing, did it go in? And then, I don't know, 30, 40 steps into the walk-up, he's like, oh, my God, it actually went in. And then, obviously, he gets up there, he pulls it out. Let's finish this video. It's only another 5-7 seconds here. So give me 1 second.
Seconds ago.
I was going to play it again because it was so good, but I'm not going to. But anyway. So this guy's playing out of his gourd. He's paired with Rory on day four. I think he's +2 at the time, so he's not really having a great round. But you know, it's PGA Championship. It's a very difficult course. +2 is great in my world, but
it's unfathomable right. In my world.
Yeah. And then he goes and pulls off an ace. The crowd goes crazy. The crowd is there for this guy a lot of ways. Sure. I mean, they're there because they're like, okay, this is the story of the tournament, one of the best stories in golf in a while, and then he goes and just puts a cherry on top and dunks it. Awesome. And like I said, to have Rory be the one who actually gets to tell you, that's like he's literally got a story that he can talk about
forever.
Before that, he probably had a story to talk about. Now, like everybody, like as soon as he starts talking, everybody's gonna be like, oh my God, it was an awesome story. It was, again, I feel like I was happy that Brooks won because I think he's really good. And I think the LIV players obviously get raked over the coals a lot for their decisions.
He got booed pretty good.
Yeah. Do you think it was fun that I didn't get to watch any of the Saturday where Brooks and Bryson DeChambeau, the arch enemies of each other, were paired up? That would have been great. I wish, apparently people were heckling Bryson the whole time, which is kind of cheeseballish, but
I saw them come out. I watched them both get booed.
But they hate each other.
Oh, yeah. They're not fans of one another. They are not friendly.
But yeah.
But listen, my thing is the same of like, I get it. Somebody made this point, and I don't remember who it was, so I'm going to regurgitate it, and probably not as well. But it's, if the PGA treated their stars better, then the LIV Golf would never have happened. And how mad do you want me to be about LIV golfers taking money from the Saudi Arabian royal family when our government does the same thing? When our government sells them weapons, when our government takes their money, sells them oil and all this other stuff, and buys their oil. Like, if we're doing that with our tax dollars, how mad do you want me to be at Dustin Johnson? Like, scale of 1 to 10. Give me, where am I supposed to be here?
Yeah, Phil got cheered, which was kind of, like, he was, you know, he's kind of like the ringleader of the whole thing, but he was getting cheered. I mean, I don't know if it's just a New York thing, because people like to cheer for Phil or whatever, but
I think Phil's just liked in,
But clearly, he was the ringleader of this whole thing.
Yes, let me rephrase
for the players.
So, the people who really care about the LIV Golf are the golf purists. They are the ones who are the most adamant about the game, and they don't like Phil. The average fan doesn't care, and the average fan loves Phil.
I get it.
Like, it has forever. Like, Phil always had the... Now, people who, like, follow the PGA and are really into it know that Phil's actually kind of a dick. Like, by all accounts, it's all a persona, and in private, he's very different. Okay, fine. But his public persona is great. His public persona that the average, like, casual golf fan would know is like, oh, Phil's, yeah, lefty, we love him. He's so fun.
Yeah, I feel like he's a better, more polished person than John Daly. Like, he's the good version of John Daly, in a sense.
Yeah,
that he's
I guess so.
Like the good old boy kind of guy. Like, he relates to the common folk anyway.
Phil Mickelson, I will actually give some sympathy to, because if not for Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson would be talked about as art, like in the conversation of majors and everything else, along with Jack Nicklaus. It was just so unfortunate that his prime coincided with the emergence and domination of Tiger Woods.
Yeah, he definitely soaked all the energy out of golf there at that point. So there was nobody really playing for second because it didn't matter. But
there was a stretch of like 4 years where Tiger Woods won like 49% of the tournaments he entered.
Yeah, he's
that's insanity.
He's a crazy person. But anyway, so and let's wrap up the PGA here with more Michael Block story. So you probably can read it on the screen, but Michael Block cashed in this weekend. Did you see how much he won? The prize pool?
No.
So top 15 technically was 309,000, but they was split and a bunch of splits ahead of him. So 288 grand.
It's a good
for
day.
Mr. Michael Brown. Probably better than his $150 a pop lessons he was teaching out in California or whatever it was.
I don't know. You could knock out a lot of lessons at 150.
And then two more things just to wrap this up. By qualifying 15th, did you watch the final round?
No.
So on 18, so backdrop, top 15 players in the PGA championship for any given year qualify for the next year's championship. So Michael Brown does qualify for next year's PGA championship.
Good for him.
But that was in not on 18, hits the ball in the fairway. I think he was okay. His approach shot ends up in the gallery. Like, so he's basically now surrounded by the people who love him. But anyway, he's surrounded. He's like in a horseshoe of humanity. Chipping out. He chips, you know, it's a in the rough. It's super high. It lands just on the fringe, rolls down. He's got about, I don't know, like 8-10 feet something for par, to save par, to get to 15, to be 15th, and then to qualify for next. It rolls in on the last revolution. Like, he almost
shorted it.
And gotcha. It tipped in. The whole crowd goes crazy. He qualifies for next year's PGA champ. He realizes it immediately that he's there. And then, not as significant as that, but the Charles Schwab calls him and says, hey, we got an exemption. You want to come play this weekend? So he's playing this weekend, too. What a dude.
Outstanding.
Yeah, this guy's got the story of a life here. So
it's good. It was a good weekend for him.
It was good. And like I said, it happened all right here in, you know, about an hour up the road. So I know a lot of people who were there, went there, you know, probably dozens of friends of mine were sending pictures of being on the course. So cool time. Cool that it happened all right here in our backyard. All right. We don't want to talk about NBA playoffs.
I mean, we can.
I mean, I don't want to. We're not going to. But
LeBron had a great series.
No. I mean, he had a great series, but he just lost. So it's all for
all right.
All for
I'm a LeBron hater, and it's not that I don't think he's good. He's arguably the best player ever. And we, you know, you could debate him and MJ or whatever else. And I think most of that is just stylistic and what you prefer.
Sure.
And I don't cheer for LeBron James at all. Like,
yeah, I mean, listen, he brings it on himself sometimes, mm-hmm. that why the people hates. And I'm not a fan of the European soccer antics that he pulls on the NBA court, where he's basically flopping every time somebody breathes on him. That's, to me, that's the easiest thing to attack on LeBron is like, you're one of the biggest, strongest dudes on the court, and you're getting knocked over by breaths, right? I mean, like, give me a break.
And clutching your eye and,
I try not to get too crazy with athletes and their political positions and whatnot. I know people don't like him because the China thing and whatever. I get that and why he won't, whatever.
Listen,
they're athletes, so I try not to hold them to a high standard for political aptitude or whatever, but.
Here's why I prefer Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was genuine. Michael Jordan was a dick. And he embraced it. He punched Steve Kerr in the face. He was like, hey, Republicans buy sneakers too. He was not getting involved because all he did, he was genuine. Who he was who he was. He was smoking cigars in the locker room before games. He was gambling the night before playoff games. Like, he was who he was. And it was remarkable. LeBron James is pretending to be something he's not. And that's where I'm just like, look, say what you will about Michael Jordan, but he wasn't full of shit. You are. You're over here like you want to impart on this one, but not this one. And you want to say like, oh, this protest is worthy, but the Chinese, Taiwanese, Hong Kong, like everything else. Yeah. Like, people just didn't understand it. Like, do you understand it? No.
And like I said, I think to your point, he probably is better. I never would tell like a musician or an athlete or an actor or whatever to be quiet about their politics. No. I don't think that's right either. So I have no problem with him giving an opinion on certain issues. I think he's inconsistent on some issues, and some of that
right.
tends to lead to people being, don't take him serious. Right. So I totally get all that. He does do some, you know, great charity work and sure. whatnot. Like it's not like he's some, you know, complete scumbag, like no. Ray Carruth or some shit. So like,
no, listen, he's fine. Right. But, and I get it. And I get the people that love him and I understand it. And I will tell this to like real basketball fans at the same time of, I'm not denying his skill. I'm not denying how good he is at the game. I just cheer against him. I find him to be somebody that I like it when he loses, and I don't know why. And it's because of all that. It's just because I'm tired of it, of like, oh, he's just this wonderful humanitarian.
Do you think he retires?
No.
He said he was pondering. He's got some decisions to make.
And then in the same sentence, he said he's better than 90 to 95% of NBA players right now.
He is.
Which is absolutely true. Sure. I'm not arguing it. No. It's absolutely accurate. It's just a, you know, just sometimes there's athletes you just find yourself cheering against. He's one of them. I don't know why. It's probably a combination of everything. When he came out and decided he was going to get heavily involved in politics and all these other social causes, it was like, look, fine, but something's going to come up that's going to challenge your consistency, and you're not going to pass that test as far as I can tell. And he didn't.
Yeah.
And no. then it was like, all right, see, this is what I mean. You just, it's not genuine concern about all human rights. It's what's better it's for selective. Your brand.
Right. Yeah, no, I
get right. it. And that's fine. But this is what I loved about Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was that, and he didn't pretend to be anything else. He literally punched Steve Kerr in the face at practice. Like, this Horace Grant literally left a championship-winning NBA team because he didn't want to play with Michael Jordan anymore. He's like, the guy's such an a-hole, I'm not playing for him. Like, I can expect that. At least Michael Jordan never pretended to be anything he wasn't. That's who he was. That's who he was all the way through. Steph Curry, I feel like the same thing. I don't ever hear Steph Curry talk about anything. He just goes out and shoots from the logo and somehow makes 60%.
Yeah, he's a social justice warrior himself. Steph Curry?
Yeah.
No, he is.
I believe it. Okay. Listen, here's the thing. They all are. And I don't
care. He's not. I don't think he's like in the closet about it though either. Like, I think he actually does the, you know, he's vocal. I mean, but to your point, he's also puts his foot in his mouth sometimes too. So like, he was, him and his wife were very anti new housing unit in their neighborhood because, you know, safety concerns, apparently.
Oh.
So I love he actually wrote a letter to the whatever town he lives in California, one of the most exclusive towns in the world, because they proposed building an apartment complex.
Low income housing. Yeah.
And he and his wife both signed a letter to the town, but like, hey, we don't think this is a good idea. So,
all right. That's the other thing that got me about LeBron. I don't like that he switched teams. I don't like it. This is like the oldest crotchety white guy thing about me is like, look, play where you play and get it done until you don't have it left. And I like that. That means that's easy.
But that's all gone, though.
I know.
And in all sports.
I don't have to like it.
I mean, even Tom Brady is switching
teams. Tom Brady stayed with the team until they said, we're moving on. And he said, okay, I'm not ready to stop playing, so I'm going to go somewhere else. Joe Montana did that. Thurman Thomas did that. A lot of guys do that. That's fine. I have no problem with that. But when you just go ring chasing by like, all right, I can't beat these guys, so instead of doing something to bring guys here, I'm going to go somewhere else.
I mean, and he was in Cleveland.
There's nothing wrong with it. Nothing. I'm not arguing it. There's nothing wrong. I just don't like it. It's just I'd rather you didn't do it. And Michael Jordan had a great quote at the time, and he goes, it would have never occurred to me to go to try to team up with Isaiah Thomas or Larry Bird. Right, it never would have occurred to me.
But that didn't stop people like Rodman going to the Bulls, right? I mean, so there's free agency. That's just part of the thing.
But if you want to be the GOAT, that means the people got to come to you. You don't, and now he's in L.A. or whatever else, and it's like, all right, fine.
I mean, it's definitely easy to recruit people to Miami and L.A. than it is to Cleveland, for sure, right?
Obviously.
So, but, all right, let's switch gears.
We
didn't talk about the NBA playoffs at all. We just talked about
Oh, yeah, it turns out Miami's really good and Denver's really good at basketball.
I think Miami's just really good, well coached. Not sure if, I mean, Jimmy Butler's
the guy.
Yeah. I can't see them beating Denver, though. I mean, listen, I don't know. What do you think the odds are of Boston coming back from down 0-3 to actually winning this, like 0%, 10%?
1.5%.
So, like, very low percent.
Very unlikely.
I think there's like a 10% chance. I think if there's a setup for an 0-3 comeback win in a best of seven, this is kind of it. The Celtics have clearly more talent on their team from top to bottom. The Heat are playing out of their minds and I think are better coached, but talent tends to win out. So I could see, and they got two of the next three games in Boston. So like, there's a bigger than normal percent. Normally I would be right with you. Be like, yeah, it's basically zero.
I don't think that a team that is that out coached can win four games in a row. I think you're probably between the two coaches.
That's probably right.
That's my opinion. And you know what a basketball expert I am. They're
the top notch.
I mean, I live and breathe NBA. That's all I do from whenever the season starts.
Are we going to talk about
is in the fall?
Victor Wembanyama?
The 7 foot.
I literally want to go to Las Vegas summer camp just to watch this dude play. Like in the most.
You love this dude.
He's so good. It's so crazy that somebody at this height has this much athletic ability. He's literally shooting like one-footed running three-pointers. Swish. Like, what? You're like 7'5 or whatever, dude. Like, I can't wait to watch this dude play.
You know he's going to get his ass kicked in the NBA.
Yeah, but so Giannis did too. Sure, yeah, Giannis did too. They're afraid to, I think maybe I mentioned this to some other people, but, you know, the story is that they're afraid to put meat and shoulders on this dude because he's so young and people worry about big men feet and they don't want to put this much weight on him, on his feet or whatever. So they're going to, you know, I think he's only like 19. So he's very young. But anyway, he'll be on the show in the future, I'm sure, when we watch him dunk in step back threes off a miss and he just dunks it. Like that's literally alien.
It's wild.
It's alien. All right. Let's switch gears. We're going from Wembanyama to the FBI whistleblowers somehow.
Wembanyama might be descended from Giants. Let's go.
Very possible. All right. So some of this is going to tie into some stuff that we probably could have covered last week when we didn't do a show, but I got a bunch of stuff on the FBI here. So abolish the FBI part 7,421.
I think it's 22.
You're probably right.
Okay.
I got three in here, so maybe it's up to 24. But anyway.
There we go.
So we had four FBI whistleblowers, alleged whistleblowers in some media publications like USA Today. They won't even call them whistleblowers. The Democrats won't even call them whistleblowers. They're like, these aren't whistleblowers. They won't give them benefits. Anyway, regardless, whistleblowers, four current/former FBI agents testified, and it was ugly. I mean, did you see the one? Did I send you the clip of where Marcus Allen, no, not the football player Marcus Allen, but the FBI agent Marcus Allen was being.
I saw it on my own.
Okay.
And it's the funniest exchange I've ever seen.
I wish I should have pulled that up. It's so, maybe it's even in the article here. I wish it was. But anyway, so I think Representative Lorena Sanchez from California, I think is her name. She is on this committee grilling these four FBI whistleblowers. She addresses one of them, Marcus Allen. Again, not that Marcus Allen. And says, you know, this is, I'll paraphrase the representative here. He's like, do you frequent Twitter? And he's like, yes. He's like, is your account Marcus Allen 9876321 48, whatever the number was? And he's like, absolutely not my account. She's like, anyway, this account says Marcus Allen 8765 whatever says Nancy Pelosi was
orchestrated
January 6th. Do you agree with this? And he's like, that's not my tweet. Basically, what are you asking me this for? And she asked him enough times to where he eventually had to answer for somebody else's tweet.
It was the best was when she said it, and she goes, and then, so I just want to know, do you believe this? And he goes, that's not my Twitter account. And she was like, I know. And then somebody else said it to her of like, that's not his. She was, I'm asking if he agrees with
it. Yeah, I think it's Jordan, yeah.
Think about the stupidity of that, of like, if I'm interrogating you for a position of authority, and I can just pull up any random thing that says, hey, this random guy who's also named Sean, tweeted this. Do you stand by it? Do you agree with that?
There's a couple of Sean Hammonds out there.
I'm just like...
Linda Sanchez is her name, just for the record.
That was the dumbest line of questioning I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
It was hilarious, and I loved every second. We live in the dumbest reality possible.
Yeah, and I was hoping to... I thought I had this quote pulled up, because there was the last guy who testified basically was asked by somebody on the committee, you know, if one of your fellow agents had information and, you know, was asking you for advice of whether or not you would come out as a whistleblower for the FBI, he said, I would tell them not to do that because they will destroy your life. They will crush you and they will crush your family and they will crush you or whatever. So, again, it's hard for me to have optimism that something's going to come from this because nothing ever fucking happens. But anyway, I think that at least there's cracks in the FBI. At least the it seems as though there's enough information out there that's getting, you know, around the Democrats, if you will, or around the media establishment, that is letting people realize that the FBI is run amok. And it's not just this thing. This is just the most recent thing. And we've talked about this for
right.
for months about the things that the FBI has been doing. Again, I'm of the opinion that it needs to be abolished. It's unsavable and it needs to be restructured in some other way. Let them start from scratch, whatever. If you can vet these agents in some way for the new service or whatever, have at it. But like, I think the FBI is spoiled to the core and is unsavable.
It's hard to argue at this point of like how blatant this is. It's just remarkable.
Yeah. And like I said, the information doesn't stop. I got another FBI scandals mount. Conducted warrantless searches on more than 250,000 U.S. citizens in 12-month period. Whoops. Accidentally.
I mean, you know how many things I've accidentally done 250,000 times?
I don't want to
know. Let he without sin cast. That was funny. Well done, sir. Yeah, 250,000 seems like a pattern. I don't know. Maybe
278,000 illegitimate queries on U.S. citizens.
Yeah, that's wild. That is, like, people don't think this is a big deal because I love the attitude of, like, well, I'm not doing anything illegal, so I don't care. Like, yeah, that's not the idea of behind this is, like, oh, well, since you're a good person, it's okay. No, it's wrong. And it's this a huge power grab by unelected bureaucrats that are now running the government, essentially, without being elected with no accountability. This is not good.
Let me bring up one more.
All right.
Local FBI twist for people. I don't know if you remember this because this happened in October 2018.
The limo?
The limo.
Yeah.
Do you remember it? Okay. So this was I'll read the headline from the New York Post. Limo operator has personal responsibility for New York crash that killed 20. So this was a Ford excursion, like some, you know, big SUV extended limo thing. Well, apparently the inspections were kind of half-assed and
counterfeit, made up.
Yeah,
never done.
And this thing didn't have the brakes to stop, and so the 20 people in this Ford excursion crashed into like a restaurant parking lot, killing 20 people, including everybody in the car, which was a bunch of newlyweds, right? It was a bunch of like sisters and brothers, and like it was terrible, like one of the worst stories. But it gets worse because the owner of the company. And his son, I think, was operating the thing. The owner is an FBI informant. And
he is not.
Got out of Dodge and went to Pakistan. He's been there ever since it happened.
Come on.
Yeah. I don't know if it's in this article or not, but so Noman Hussein, he's the operator of the Prestige limousine. Let's see if I can get his father's name up here. If you can see what happened here. Yeah. Not, I mean, just one of the worst things when it happened, it was. And I will say, I'll give, I guess, credit to Elise Stefanik, who has been on this case trying to find additional information. So Shahid Hussein, a former FBI informant, was charged with criminally negligent homicide in the tragic wreck and later released on a $50,000 bond. And then he fled the country and hasn't been seen since. So there was a plea deal.
Yes.
For the owner that the judge was like, we're not doing this.
It involved no jail time.
Yeah. And so to me, that's just the FBI injecting their influence into a case that killed 20 people.
It's possible.
And so I'm going to bring this up in the abolish the FBI thing because this is how it seems the FBI operates, right? They have all these informants all over the place. They allow them to do shady crap and get away with it and have protection legally from all this stuff. And I think this is just another example of it. So, again, if we can abolish the FBI, the sooner the better in my world.
At this point, I tend to agree of it does more harm than good.
Yeah. But
here's the flip side. Like, we're kind of in the entertainment business now-ish.
Sure.
Ish.
Infotainment.
Sure. And here's the thing. Without the FBI, who's going to come up with the plots? All right? Like,
fair.
This is interesting stuff to talk about. And if they're not there to stop.
I mean, do you want to talk about Cy Kenduhar, who, you know, crashed his U-Haul in the Capitol building and then, as he was getting out of the truck, laid out his Nazi flag? Pristinely, so for the photo op.
So the first thing you
say,
do,
look, here's what I did.
The first thing you do as a law enforcement officer when you're like going through a crime scene is you move everything out and lay it on the ground for pictures. That's...
Well, the apparently the dude did that.
Oh,
so he crashed his truck and then pulled. The only thing that was in the whole truck was this Nazi flag.
Sure,
he had a gigantic U-Haul carrying nothing except this flag. And then when he crashed, slow motion crashed into this barrier. Wasn't even like he wasn't going fast. He was going like 2 miles an hour. Like an idiot. Yeah. This is like you could see him like trying to weave through. Just it got stuck. So then he gets out and spreads out this Nazi flag and starts yelling a bunch of gibberish. I mean, it's a 19-year-old from Missouri, apparently. I don't know.
Is it Indian descent?
Indian descent. It seems like. I mean, I didn't get his passport, but Sai Sai is a Indian.
Yeah, surname. Yeah, yeah, makes sense. So it would seem to me now.
I'm not saying that's the FBI, but.
I'm not saying it's not.
I'm not saying it's not.
We have that Latino neo-Nazi in Texas that went and killed white people. Mm-hmm. Then we have a Nazi Indian who why didn't he fill up the U-Haul? Like, if you're going to try to ram a gate, wouldn't you want as much weight behind you as possible?
Yeah.
That would seem like basic mathematics, right?
Or at least have a plan. I mean, why would you... I mean...
You want to get going fast, and if you got some weight behind, that's why you get a U-Haul. Otherwise, you just do it in a car, you idiot. Like, you fill the thing with weight so it actually has some force. All right, disappointment on two levels. Number one, Indian people should be smarter than that. That's number one. All right, you are a disservice. You might actually be a Nazi with that kind of intelligence. My God, what a disservice you did to your people. Number two, it's kind of heartwarming that the neo-Nazi slash white supremacist movement is becoming more and more diverse. We should all take a moment to appreciate that.
Yeah.
They seem Latinos, very inclusive. Indians. Like, it might be the most diverse movement we have going right now. Yeah.
I feel like the KKK was just too early.
You know what?
They were ahead of their time?
They might have been too early. The KKK didn't even let Catholics in. But now, apparently neo-Nazis today is like, yeah, Latino, Indian, whatever, let's go, bring it in. I don't know who they're fighting against anymore, though, because I always assumed it was non-white people.
Yeah, well, Larry Elder was the black face of white supremacy, remember?
Yeah, I forgot about that one. But yeah, see, it just proves my point. This is a lot of diversity inside them. We should applaud their progress. They got ways to go. I'm not telling you they're there yet. But these are steps in the right directions, guys. Let's be happy that we're seeing this inclusive.
Yeah, inclusive. I'm with you.
But yeah, seriously, come on. You're not I'm having a hard time. If a white guy did it, I wouldn't be shocked at all. That an Indian guy didn't load it up with a bunch of stuff, like didn't understand the mathematics of like the force and everything else that would be required.
I thought they're bad at math in India.
Mm-mm.
Oh.
How many Indian doctors do you see? Like, they are just more intelligent than we are on average.
All right. So abolish the
FBI? Is that racist? I don't know.
I mean, probably somebody, but whatever. We done with the
if
FBI?
If I can't mock the intelligence of an Indian white supremacist, then I don't want to live in this country anymore.
All right. Let's do some craziness.
All right.
One of my all-time favorite stories, and I guess maybe if you've been paying attention to our show, this is probably one of your all-time favorite stories as well. So we have some Jeffrey Epstein news, which is always fun for me. I will say that I'm temporarily, or at least right now in real time, disappointed in JeffreyEpsteinNews.com, which is a site that I became aware of, I don't know, 2 or 3 days ago. It basically said yesterday they were going to start releasing new information. And so far, the only information they gave was a rundown of William Burns, former CIA director, which is, noteworthy of for sure. And my hope was that... whoever was giving the information to the Wall Street Journal, who's been dripping out pieces on Jeffrey Epstein for the last week or so, whoever gave the Wall Street Journal that information also gave it to somebody else, and that somebody else was in charge of this JeffreyEpsteinNews.com or whatever, and that they were going to start releasing information in conjunction. I mean, not the same information the Wall Street Journal was doing, but something similar. And so far, that's all we got was William Burns, this is William Burns, he did this, whatever. But we got that information a little bit already in the Wall Street Journal. So no new nothing year there yet. But We do have some new names involved in this whole Epstein thing, including our boy Elon. He got subpoenaed.
Uh-oh.
On top of that, we'll get to that in a second. But first, let's talk about our other boy, one Bill Gates. So speaking, let me read the headline here.
Supremacists.
Yeah, sounds like it. Jeffrey Epstein allegedly tried to extort Bill Gates over extramarital affair. Weird.
Which one?
Yeah, well, this one. So I'll read the first paragraph here. The convicted sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein appeared to threaten Bill Gates and tried to blackmail the multibillionaire over his extramarital affair with Russian bridge player, according to a new report published in the Wall Street Journal. So apparently this goes like in 2010. Gates has this affinity for this Russian bridge player. They have their thing. And then in 2013, somehow Jeffrey Epstein comes in contact with this girl, and she tells him, oh, yeah, by the way, so-and-so, this. And so Epstein goes and pays for this girl to learn coding. Seriously.
So, for real?
Yeah. And so she was a bridge player, but apparently she wanted to learn coding. So Epstein pays for her to go to school to learn coding, and then calls Epstein, was like, hey, guess what? I paid for this girl. You might know her. I paid for her to go to school. You're going to pay for her to go to school. So Epstein basically, by acknowledging that he knew this girl, there's no way Gates, I mean, well, I guess there's a way. But anyway, I'm assuming that it turned out that Bill Gates took that as a, oh shit, he knows about this and now he can use that against me for whatever reason. And let's just bring up the fact that Melinda Gates has left, divorced Bill Gates and cited Jeffrey Epstein as a reason. So I'm not sure what to make of this exactly, but this kind of fits into what we've been talking about, how Jeffrey Epstein was a information gatherer.
Yeah.
And used that to his advantage to further policies and the ability to basically skate free with that information as blackmail. So, I mean, Gates...
She was in her 20s at the time. That's what I was looking up. I was trying to figure out an age.
Yeah. I mean, we can talk about the Chinese spy that he was banging too.
I mean, or all the women he was awkwardly sexually harassing when they made him leave Microsoft.
Yeah. Listen, he's not a good person. I think that can be pretty much
how anybody thinks he is.
There are people who literally idolize this guy, still think that he's some philanthropic genius and, you know, he's saving humanity, but he's an evil SOB. And
as long as you're not African, he's probably trying to help you. But my God, like, there's a reason he's going there to run these trials, folks. And it ain't because of all the rigorous safety rules that are in place.
But on top of Bill Gates, let's go down some of these names here. The Epstein list here. Jamie Dimon. We covered this a little bit. I would recommend everybody, again, go read Whitney Webb's The Rise of Jamie Dimon, because it kind of points to a lot of overlap in the personnel who were responsible for the placement of Jamie Dimon at the head of J.P. Morgan and the crew that ran with Jeffrey Epstein. So, sure. Weird.
Probably a coincidence.
Elon Musk. So, apparently, Elon Musk is being subpoenaed because this is, you know, obviously hasn't happened. I think he's Wednesday. Maybe he's today, actually. I think he might be today. There's somebody going today, and there's somebody going on the 6th, but I can't remember which date was which. But anyway, so the thought is here surrounding the subpoena for Elon Musk is that he was aware of financial transaction that Epstein was making that would basically confirm or validate this idea that he was using JP Morgan as basically the funding for his whole sex trafficking operation. So Larry Page, he has not been able to be found yet. He'd been trying to serve him subpoena, and he's missing.
You know,
weird.
It's not weird. Smart. If I was a billionaire and I like, and this was what I had done, and they were like, hey, we got a subpoena for you, you'd never see me again. I would be out.
You would think he has enough money to get out.
I mean, come on.
The founder of, co-founder of Google, right, Larry Page.
You probably have enough money.
Yeah.
To and just disappear somewhere into a very, very nice home with everything you could ever want. In the middle of nowhere.
Also subpoenaed, Sergey Brin, the also co-founder of Google. Just interesting that these most powerful people, Bill Gates is number 5 on the list. Jess Staley, former chairman of J.P. Morgan, who basically might have been diddling people as well as facilitating the money laundering operation, but J.P. Morgan there. So the list is, I mean, this doesn't even talk about Larry Summers. I mean, there's
more.
This is just it's fun to put all the names together and be like, how the hell did this guy get access to all the, like, literally the people running the world? They were at his house and his island and his other house
and his ranch
where
he was trying to be the one who repopulated humanity.
At least he was using his own DNA, I guess.
Yeah, that's weird.
Anyway, so I hope that this Jeffrey Epstein news.com thing turns out to be new information.
Sure.
Because, like, I think you actually saw it. Because I've seen a bunch of pictures that I'm like, that's not a real. Like, I've never seen this Epstein picture before. Like, remember the fake one that somebody was sharing?
Tom Hanks and
Epstein? Well, no, not that. But somebody was sharing one with Epstein and Trump and, like, a bunch of girls. And you were like, you're looking at the photo and like, okay, there's way too many arms, not enough legs. Like, this is not a real photo. How does somebody think this is a real photo? I feel like I've seen almost every photo of Jeffrey Epstein that's ever been made public. I've been looking at this thing for almost 10 years now. Sure. And when I see a new photo, I'm like, okay, that's something. I can tell when I've seen new information. And I haven't seen anything yet from this Jeffrey Epstein thing. I mean, other than William Burns' name was new, you know, revealed in the Wall Street Journal a week or so ago. So, and the fact that he was meeting with Epstein and didn't know who he was is mind-boggling.
I wonder if I could get a meeting with the head of the CIA.
Probably.
I'm like, I mean, if I just call this, set it. Like, how? Yeah. How?
I mean, just, you know, you got to have enough money.
That's or
be compromised. That's all.
0-2.
Yeah. Anyway, so there will be no shortage of Jeffrey Epstein coverage on this show. So sure. We'll keep you guys updated as best we can here. So, on this terrible thing. So, I mean, we're going to go a little bit local now, Mr. Huesong. We're going to switch gears, and we're going to go to Central New York, where we are located. We are in Onondaga County, which is right smack dab in the middle of New York State, about 4 hours from New York City.
Roughly. I drive fast.
I mean, depending on where you're going in New York City, I guess, but, you know, say 3.5-4 hours, if that seems fair.
It's fair.
So let's do a little bit of backdrop. So we had this Title 42 expired when the COVID emergency ended.
Yep.
And Title 42 was a tool or a means that government officials could relocate asylum seekers and immigrants coming across the border very quickly and move them back to across the other back to the other side of the border. So when that expired, that gave very little recourse for some of these governments to actually get rid of, or Texas specifically, you know, Arizona, New Mexico, all the border states down there, gave them less tools to work with, right? So now these immigrants were coming across the border. I mean, if you've seen pictures of El Paso, you can see some of these border towns are just overrun. They're like basically camps. They're like tent cities, and we're just hanging out in alleys. But anyway, so Texas governor decided to send some of those immigrants to New York City. We covered this maybe a few months ago, where I think they're up to something like, I don't know, 70,000, I think, immigrants that were shipped to New York City. I think that's the number I heard.
Okay.
But apparently, at least around 200 are being shipped to Salina, New York, which is a little tiny little suburb of Syracuse,
sure,
in Onondaga County. And so we found out about this from Supervisor Nick Parro, friend of the program. I don't know. I asked him to come on. I didn't hear back, so maybe he's not a friend of the program anymore. But anyway, Supervisor Nick Parro of Salina, got a phone call from Chris Ellis, who is some kind of communications guy for Mayor Adams in New York City, and said, hey, just a quick heads up. We're sending a bus of immigrants to your town. Thank you. See ya. Nick Parro, the supervisor there, basically told him about his emergency. He declared emergency in Onondaga County, or our county executive did. And he also had declared one in Salina. And this was in an effort to basically keep the establishments from occupying residential people, i.e. the migrants coming from New York City. So Chris Ellis, the spokesman for the New York City, said, okay. And this sent him up. They were sending him anyway. So didn't care about the emergency declaration by either the county executive or the supervisor, and has sent a bus of upwards of 200 migrants to Salina.
It's a big bus.
They're supposed to arrive here today.
Oh, boy.
That being said, the Honorable Bob Antonacci.
All right. I love that you use that.
Also in my phone somehow. An Onondaga County judge Tuesday issued two restraining orders blocking a town of Salina hotel from housing asylum seekers from New York City. So this is the town filed a lawsuit against Candlewood Suites on South Bay Road. It is alleged plan to house asylum seekers in New York City. So one little caveat to this, apparently this hotel was already working around their zoning specifications, which is a commercial, not a residential. So they were offering long-term housing to some of the, to local residents, people who were just, you know, down on their luck and whatnot. They were offering cheap housing, long-term housing at this hotel.
Okay.
I haven't done any digging, but I'm guessing the owner of Candlewood Suites has some kind of connection to New York City, because I'm not sure how the mayor would have known to use this hotel. Sure. But either way, Supreme Court Judge Robert Antonacci signed a temporary restraining order from the town of Salina, which prevents Candlewood Suites from accepting any asylum seekers from New York City. The court date for this town lawsuit is May 31st. So we have a little bit of a temporary restraining order here. So it looks like on May 31st, maybe we'll get a ruling one way or the other. But this is all a cluster F, right? So like this whole thing is bleeding at the border. The states down there are overwhelmed. Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. They're basically offloading this problem to other cities, sanctuary cities. Supposedly New York City was a sanctuary city. Syracuse technically was a sanctuary city. Not technically. It was declared a sanctuary city by the previous administration here in Syracuse, Stephanie Miner. But they really don't have the authority to do, though. It's kind of like a just a in-name only kind of thing. It's literally nothing, meant nothing. But anyway, the current mayor and the county executive both said, basically, we're not a sanctuary city. You know, the county executive basically said, you know, we're the one policing this, so the city couldn't even declare a sanctuary city otherwise, because it would be the sheriffs who would be, you know, working with ICE. Now, that being said, just to bring the sheriffs, the Onondaga County Sheriff, into this discussion, he has said we're not going to enforce this emergency order because he was fearful of profiling and violating basically constitutional rights of people who...
Okay.
He would not be able to, you know, differentiate between an illegal asylum seeker and a U.S. citizen without doing some kind of a profiling, and therefore he didn't want to do this. So, you know, people are having their animosity back and forth between, you know, the county executive and Supervisor Paro and the Sheriff Shelley. And so there are no good answers in any of this. This is, you know, I feel bad for the asylum seekers. They're coming from terrible places. They're sold a bill of goods. Hey, you get on this bus. You can march your way to the border and, you know, kumbaya, right? You know, all roses and songs and happy life thereafter. They're getting here and they're being bussed around the country and hours of bus rides. I mean, days of bus rides, right? Really.
Sure.
And this is not just coming from Texas, even though that's where the majority are coming from. They're coming from everywhere. And New York City is not the only place that's receiving these migrants. They're going to other places as well. I don't really see an end to this until we get a control at the border, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do you have any hot takes on this in general? I mean, along the way, there are situations happening at the border. There are situations happening, but you want to critique between Texas and New York City, and then again from New York City and the state, if you will, to these upstate counties. I mean, basically the Mayor Adams has been threatening, is probably not the right word, but threatening counties that we're going to send some migrants your way because we can't do it anymore. So now this all comes after, you know, first Mayor Adams and Hochul are yelling at Governor Abbott, like, how can you send, this is such inhumane treatment of people. And then they're doing the same thing because they get to the same point. They get a breaking point where you're like, we can't do this anymore. We don't have the resources. And Salina is a tiny little town, right? Like, you know, they're full of hotels, which is kind of crazy. And, you know, basically a sitting duck for some of this migrant movement. But I don't know how this is going to play out because I just not well enough on the legal ramifications of restraining orders and whatnot. This is all new territory for me. So I'm assuming it's mostly new territory for all these people. We're going to find out maybe in a week here what happens, but I don't know what happens in between. You know, if there's a temporary restraining order right now and these guys show up in the parking lot today, or do they just have to, like, they can't go into the hotel, they have to hang out in the bus for another couple days? Like, I don't know how it all unfolds here. So it's not good for anybody. It's not good for the people. It's not good for the towns. It's not good for anybody who's trying to deal with this. It's not something that you're typically dealing with. So there's no, like, to me, I don't think, there's no, like, specific protocol that the town supervisor should do, or the county executive should do, or the mayor should do, or the governor should do. Like, I don't know what the right answer is. Clearly, we got a bunch of wrong answers leading to where we are now. And again, the only way I feel like it ever gets a handle on it, if it gets controlled at the border. And I'm pretty easy. My immigration stance is pretty easy, right? Like, give them a health check, give them a security check, let them work, give them work visas, and let them go, right? Like, if it works, it works. If it doesn't, we'll know. Like, if they're not going to make it, they'll hike their ass right back across the border.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I actually am a very pro-immigration for the most part.
I think people are net good.
Yeah.
Every time you have a new person, it should be a net good. Now, listen, we have a system where these people aren't allowed to work and they're coming and they can't speak the language. So there's limitations in this specific, dynamic thing that's happening here. So we're not getting the efficient use of these people when they're coming here. If we could figure that out, first of all, we would have a much better idea who's coming across the border. Because it's not just people trekking from Venezuela, right? These people are coming from Africa and China. They know that they can get to Central or South America, and they can get to the U.S. border, and they can get in too. So it's not just, Central and South American asylum seekers walking up here. There's people trying to exploit the system from all over the globe.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is the system right now, as it is currently constructed, doesn't work, and it's like designed not to work, unfortunately. And the problem you have is, number one, there's not an easy solution ultimately to this. If you put me in charge and I was, king of America, I'd probably end most of.
Would you like me to formulate a write-in campaign for your king of America?
I think I could. I would give it up after a day. I would undo a lot of things and then ride off into the sunset. I would exile myself afterwards and just leave. That sounds like a glorious plan, actually. But it was just like, so here's all the different factors that are running through my mind. Number one, you these poor people getting bussed all over the place, getting moved from one to another. And then on top of that, you're going to this promised land of opportunity, and everywhere you go is a bunch of people who don't look like you, yelling at you to get out, and we don't want you and can't take you. Like, that's rough. The other problem is, because the border is so porous and so unenforced right now, child trafficking, sex trafficking. I mean,
I think I saw, and I don't know where I saw this data, so hopefully somebody can post it in the comments if they know where they got. I saw something like 350,000 kids came across, are counted, 85,000 of them are unaccounted for to your trafficking.
Lord.
Yeah, right. So, like, and I don't know what that means, if people are just, they don't want to check in with their whatever and they're out, or if there's actually a problem. But that's a large number.
We don't have the numbers, realistically. But if you think that there's not one child being illegally trafficked across this border right now, then you are naive. Like, it's just, you're living in a fantasy land where you want to believe the world is all sunshine and rainbows, and that's not reality. I think most people are net good. However, the idea that the bad doesn't exist is insane.
Right. That's why you do the health check and security check, right?
Like, right.
It shouldn't be as difficult as it is. Like, right now, like, there's long waits. It costs money. I mean, there's some things that we have problems with. Like I said, the system is broken. Yeah. The immigration system is broken.
Listen, if you want to take a step back even further than that, I mean, why is Latin America, Central America, and Mexico so corrupt and broken right now? Largely due to the war on drugs in America and the CIA using these different countries to topple communists, even if they were elected, and then using it for running drugs through, therefore leading to the rise of these various cartels that assumed all the power. Not entirely the CIA's fault, but they're not exactly innocent either. So it's our foreign policy in many cases that is causing a lot of these problems. And it's the, and I think the other thing we got to stop is, look, the government doesn't have any money. It's just, let's start there. The government is $32 trillion in debt and is not the answer to the problems. So if the government does have about six jobs it's supposed to do, I don't want to use the word like, control the border or whatever else, but make the border efficient. Like, if you want to come here, fine, but there's a process. I'm all for it. The more the merrier. Let's go. If you can come in and contribute, I want to have you here. Yeah. But when you make it so difficult that people are hiring coyotes from the Sinaloa cartel to, you know, give them 10 grand and a child to sneak the rest of the family in, that system's broken. You have to stop that. And I don't have the answer, but the answer can't be you just keep putting these people into small towns that can't take it. I don't blame people in Salina for being upset about this. I really don't. It's easy for me to say it because, I mean, I don't think too many are coming out to my neighborhood, so it'd be easy for me to be like, come on, guys, have a heart. But there is a problem with resources. There is a problem with crime that comes with this. There is a problem with all of these different aspects. And the idea that there's some simple solution is crazy.
Yeah, and it's not like this is some natural migration where you have a bunch of families coming through and whatnot. These are primarily like 16 to 20-year-old dudes, right? So that's who's coming.
Terrifying.
Right. So there's not like, it's not like you're bringing in this, again, like the organic or natural, you know, group of people. They're it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. That's it. It's like you're laying out all of the groundwork to get bad results, and then you're just, this is where the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Oh, we just want to give all these people a chance and an opportunity. That's fine. But then if I come back and say, well, then we got to cut off a lot of the welfare side of things. The government can't have open borders and everybody gets food, phones, lodging, healthcare, and everything else. It's just like, we can't do it. And oh, you're heartless. Like, it's not heartless. It's reality. I don't know what to tell you. I would love it if we could, but we can't. It's not the real world that we actually live in.
And like
in.
I said, this is not a, all the, most of the cities in the Northeast were built on immigration, but this is not the immigration that was happening back then. This is a complete distortion of what it's supposed to be. And we're seeing the ramifications of it.
Yeah. Like most people don't understand for the most part, when immigrants back in the day, when we had our big immigration boom that built this country, when you move
back after the fall of Tartaria.
Yes, after the fall of Tartaria, of the Tartarian Empire, when people came over here, they didn't go and assimilate into like, hey, I came from Ireland, so what's the most diverse neighborhood I could move into in New York City? Like, nope, it was, where are the Irish folks? And the Italians asked the same question. Anybody coming over from Germany asked the same question. Anybody coming over from anywhere, it was the same question. It was, where are my people? And then over time, it started integrating more and more and more and more. And there's a certain comfort in that for people that are new. Because admittedly, if I left America today and moved to Pakistan, I would be more comfortable. Like, oh, there's like an American neighborhood. All right, I think I'm going to go there. And then as I learn the language and culture and everything else, I can go. But I'm going to start here. And this is just, it's basic human nature. That's what you would want. So I don't know how in the world this ends well.
Yeah, that's, like I said, I'm exactly the same way. I don't know how it ends well. There's too many moving parts that are going in the wrong direction. All right, before we touch on the last segment of the day here, let me remind everybody to like and share the video, subscribe to the channel, leave us a 5-star rate and review.
Help those algorithms.
And then in the comments, I want to know if you're a Republican voter, who are you going to vote for in the primary? That's what I want to know, since that's what we're going to talk about next. Election 2024. First, let's go back to former President Donald Trump. We didn't talk about this, but he went on CNN.
Yeah.
Did a town hall. The left lost their mind for platforming the former president, who's running for president again.
Seems kind of like
weird.
Yeah. A weird stance to take.
Yeah, for sure. But I want to bring up one point. And I got this one of his responses here that I think was the most important part. But I don't understand how we got to a point where asking questions of the former president and the guy who's running for president now is somehow platforming. First of all, it's effing Donald Trump, right? I mean, like, he doesn't need a platform. He literally went there, you know, into the lion's den, if you will, was like, all right, I'll go to CNN. Like, I know they hate me. I'm going to go there. I know what I'm going. He knew what he was getting into, right? It wasn't like he was ambushed or, right. I mean, he literally was pulling shit out of his pocket being like, yeah, I knew you were going to ask this here. This is why you're wrong kind of thing. So, but let me bring up this, response that he had, in They're talking about the war in Ukraine, right? So let me get the audio set up here so you guys don't hear my voice and echo here. So give me 1 second.
I was impeached by a crazy woman named Nancy Pelosi.
But the question here is, would you give Ukraine weapons and funding if you were
I would sit down. Let me just put it a nicer way. If I'm president, I will have that war settled in one day, 24 hours.
How would you settle that war in one day?
Because I'll meet with Putin. I'll meet with Zelensky. They both have weaknesses and they both have strengths. And within 24 hours, that war will be settled. It'll be over. It'll be absolutely over.
Do you want
over.
Ukraine to win this war?
I don't think in terms of winning and losing. I think in terms of getting it settled so we stop killing all these people and breaking down this country. Now, I was impeached by a crazy woman named Nancy.
All right, so he doesn't want people to die. Seems like a crazy take. Now, maybe I've mentioned this on the show before, maybe I mentioned this too, but like foreign policy is my number one issue. So I start every political, you know, assessment of a politician based through their lens of war.
You're a liar because you always start with their connection to Jeffrey Epstein. Then you go to their state.
There's no difference between those two. They're exact. Epstein, and you know, Epstein was part of a Iran-Contra deal.
Yes, right? Okay. I actually did because I hang out with you.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's. Foreign I mean, listen, I can tie monetary policy into this as well because you couldn't have the foreign policy that we have without monetary policy. But I think war is the reason why Trump won in 2016. I think it's the reason why Obama won in 2008. I think the public wants an anti-war president, and I think that should be the job of the president. I feel like RFK once said that, JFK said the number one job, maybe it was RFK, I can't remember, one of the dead Kennedys. Said, remember that band?
Yes.
I don't remember any of the song. It just came to my head. But that one of them said basically, you know, the number one job of the president is to keep us out of war. And I tend to agree that that's
should be
the number one priority.
We haven't been good at that lately.
No. We are over in my lifetime.
We covered this. The last president to not engage in bombing a new country while in office was Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
Jimmy Carter.
The 70s. Craziness. So I, you know, it's hard for me to read into the GOP base to figure out what they like, what their number one issues are. I don't think it's war. I think they tend to kind of just go with the flow. If their guy's in office, okay, we're okay to bomb. And if the other guy's in office,
bombing is wrong.
Right, right. And then vice versa if you're a Democrat. So, but I think this was Trump's strongest thing in 2016. I think this is why he won. He was attacking Bush for weapons of mass destruction in real time on stage. Yeah. Like not even like literally calling him that they were the reason why we got into war. Right. And so I don't know if that holds true in 2024 still. Obviously we have this Ukraine war and that's why I brought this up because he basically says he's going to settle the war in 24 hours. I tend to believe him for some reason, which is crazy to me because I wouldn't think it was really possible. But tell me if he becomes president, he flies over there, meets with each of those two like a week apart. Again, 24 hours is probably, you know, aggressive. But I think he could get at least a ceasefire within 48 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And then if you're doing that and you negotiate properly, it's over.
So Putin would agree with ceasefire right away. And if he went to Zelensky and said, I'm cutting off all aid, military and civilian. You get nothing unless you agree to a ceasefire right now. What's he going to say? No. Yeah,
right.
Okay. Done.
Right.
And this is the thing. Like the war absolutely could be, this war could be settled in a week. It could be.
I think so. I think you're right. Because it's hard for me to imagine that Zelensky deep down thinks that this is going great. We should just keep going. Pedal to the metal. Let's finish this off. Like, I can't believe that he actually thinks that. So, even though that might be what he's playing in public, there's, with the data that we know, and I'm assuming that he knows it better than we do, I think you're right. He would want this to be over. I don't understand why he would be meeting with, you know, the Prime Minister of China or President of China if that wasn't the case, right? Yeah. Like, I think he's trying to figure out a way out. And I think you know, Russia, I think, has done enough to, I mean, I think they're not going to lose the Donbass region, right? I mean, they're, this is.
No, I think that ship sailed when you, when Boris Johnson talked Zelensky out of suing for peace a year ago.
So Russia's going to get everything they want. They have a weakened Ukraine military after whatever, what it was, 8 months, something like whatever, how long we've been at war, whatever it
over
is.
Over a year.
Okay. So, and Russia's going to gain the territory that they, you know, they're going to solidify the territory that they'd already assumed was theirs anyway. So I think it's going to be more concrete anyway.
This is the cold, hard reality of war, of if you lose, you lose. You don't get to turn around afterwards and be like, hey, I know you got it, but as a part of the peace deal, could you give us back the Donbass, Crimea, and like this part? Yes, no.
No is the answer.
No, you had, I gave you the option back then of all we were looking for was referendum voting in this, and you said no. You wanted the fight. We fought. We won. You don't get it back now. That's not how war works. It'd be nice if it was. And this is the problem, is the amount of propaganda that is coming out of Ukraine and out of Europe and essentially from our intelligence agencies, FBI and above, will give most Americans the impression that Ukraine is winning. Or is at least at like a stalemate.
Competing, right, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, that's, if I listen, I understand Russia also engages in propaganda.
Yeah, there's a fog of war that is real, right? It's, I mean, very. I totally get it. Like, both sides are playing each other. Both sides are trying to reveal nothing. They're trying to not only not reveal things, but they're trying to misdirect people into other things. So, like, I get that. That's why, I thought about bringing up the fall of Bakhmut, but I don't think we have enough information.
I don't know what happened yet.
Right. Yeah. So, like, I'm going to wait on that and see. But
same.
If.
Here's the, like, from an objective standpoint with a limited military knowledge. Now, in context, if you would have said in 1776, the American colonists are going to uprise and fight against the British Empire, the prevailing wisdom would have been they can't win. It's just not reality. It's a 1% chance. So, in the same breath, I'm going to say this. Ukraine against Russia has no chance of winning. It's a 1% chance. It's just, there's too many Russians. Their military technology is too far ahead of Ukraine's. They have, for every one person that Ukraine can afford to lose, Russia can afford to lose about 10 to make it comparable. So anytime you see that a battle happened and they lost about the same number of people, that's bad for Ukraine. Russia's air force is so far ahead of Ukraine's. It's unbelievable. And, guys, this is basic military strategy. Controlling the high ground matters. So Russia's not even using their air force right now, not in any meaningful way. But if they ever thought they were actually losing, that, I guess that would be what I would look for, is if Russia was losing, the air force would get involved and they'll go scorched earth. If they're not doing that, it means that they're still very confident in their position and they're still in the driver's seat.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, I think it should be the number one topic of discussion in both primaries. And I don't think it's, you know, I think Trump will try to bring it up because I think he thinks he has a distinct position versus Ron DeSantis specifically. And RFK definitely has a distinct position versus Joe Biden. So I think it gets brought up at least on the Republican side. I don't know if it ever gets talked about on the Democrat side because I don't think they allow it to happen. But so let's touch base on one thing that happened last week that we didn't touch on, but it kind of bleeds into what we're going to talk about next. So Tucker Carlson, we know of formerly of Tucker Carlson Tonight on Fox News, has said he's going to launch a new show on Twitter.
That's exciting.
I'm excited about that. I'm on Twitter, so I'll be able to watch. Still no official word yet, so I tend to think that the contract is somehow still intact with Fox and therefore is limiting his public exposure and stuff right now. I think he is suing Fox because they released some information and stuff and basically say it was a breach of contract. I don't know. Quick takes on Tucker going to Twitter first, and then we'll talk about what that means for the 2024 race in a second here.
I think it's great. I mean, I think Twitter is becoming more and more of a free speech home, which I like to see, and they're going to let everything happen.
Rudy Havenstein is still blocked on Twitter, just for the record.
That's such bullshit.
Suspended. Sorry.
All right, yeah, I take it back. Screw you, Elon. Bring Rudy back. That was the best account on Twitter.
Yeah. He's on Substack now.
I know. I follow him. I get all of his stuff. I love the people that are all offended. Like, it's turning into a right-wing thing. And then somebody said, Elon, the only way to make this fair is for Elon Musk to offer to interview Joe Biden in the same way. And he responded like, I'm in.
Yeah.
Now, Joe Biden's never going to agree to that.
No.
But he's Elon Musk for AI, all of his faults.
AI Biden might agree to that.
AI Biden might agree to
remotely
that.
Remotely from the fake White House. That would be great.
That would be. Do you think it'd be the one with hair or the one without hair?
I don't know.
Without hair, I my guess. Okay. But anyways, it's I've liked to see it. I think that it's a good thing overall. I think the comparisons to white supremacy and David Duke for Elon Musk are hilariously misguided. Like you're like mental illness here at this point, guys.
Did you see the headline? And I can't think of who wrote it. I want to say like it was like the Atlantic, something like that. Anyway, where they were like, Ron DeSantis is going to announce his candidacy on Twitter with Elon because David Duke was not available.
Yeah, because apparently David Duke was unavailable. Like comparing dumb. Elon Musk dumb. To David Duke, so like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
You don't need to be taken seriously. That's kind of where I'm at when I read something.
Yeah,
Latinos
sure.
can be white supremacists too. Was like. Okay, I don't have to take you seriously anymore because you're more concerned with pushing your side than any level of objectivity or truth. Okay, cool. Thank you for letting me know. Now, please keep yelling into the wind, and I'll figure out if that stance ever needs to change.
And why I think Tucker going to Twitter is a bigger story or will be a bigger story going forward is, again, we piggyback this with Governor DeSantis set to launch 2024 bid with Elon Musk tonight on Twitter Spaces.
Oh, boy.
Can't wait for Trump to crash that shit.
Be hilarious.
If there was ever a time for Trump to break his Twitter silence, this would be epic.
Oh my God.
It would be, I mean.
I think you and I are still pretty firmly on Team Chaos. Like, to hell with it. It's
all in on Team Chaos.
Let's just go.
Yeah. And so there is not, it would be ultimate. I mean, there would be carnage. But listen, it would be going back and forth. I'm guessing at some point they would just kick Trump out because it would be complete. Like he would just overtake the spaces, right? Like he would.
Yeah.
He would dominate the conversation, and everybody would want to hear what he was having to say anyway.
Yep.
And therefore, the people who were running the spaces would just kick him off. And
it's actually a brilliant play by Elon Musk.
Oh no! As I said, it was like the ultimate bait to get Trump back on Twitter. Is literally this is the perfect. Perfect storm for that. So
can I like just in a moment of if I'm being completely honest as I look at all the candidates currently running for office, I genuinely am cheering for RFK Jr.
Yeah,
right.
No, me
now.
Too.
I like 100% in his camp.
He's been on multiple libertarian leaning shows of recently.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know who Dennis Kucinich is.
I heard the name, but I don't
know. So Dennis Kucinich is a former representative from somewhere in the Midwest, I want to say Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
He served when Ron Paul, in the, the early 2000s. And so Dennis Kucinich, that was just hired as the campaign manager for RFK Jr. Very anti-war position, Dennis Kucinich, who is also on the board of advisors for the Ron Paul Institute.
Oh.
So weird confluence of things going on here. RFK, you know. Ardent Democrat family,
sure.
Like, you know, left for sure. And, you know, Ron Paul Institute is very anti-war, and so Dennis Kucinich is very anti-war, and RFK is very anti-war. So all of a sudden, all this overlap is happening where RFK is sharing articles from LouRockwell.com. He went on the podcast with Dave Smith,
yep.
Who is,
libertarian
very,
stand-up
yeah,
comic.
Very libertarian. Yeah. So it is a weird dynamic of... RFK, like he is my ultimate wild card. Now, mind you, I think if he gains traction, he becomes the third
Kennedy.
Yeah, maybe the fourth if you want to count JFK Jr. I don't know where you stand on that.
That's a fascinating conspiracy theory. I like that.
But anyway, I think RFK ends up in a similar situation if he starts polling at like 30-40%. Like, there's a problem, and right now he's at like 21. So. Totally intrigued by an RFK run. Same. I think he has no chance because the Democratic primary is rigged and there's not going to be any debates. And, you know, the Debbie Wasserman Schultz of the world exist and they will make sure that...
they'll do their job.
You're right. They will do their job. So
I got you. Anyways, we can get back on track.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, that's all part of the same thing. So I don't know that any of the other announcements matter for in the 20. I mean, Tim Scott announced. Do you think Chris Christie's supposed to announce within a week or so?
Is he still like
relevant? He thinks that he can rough up Trump.
Oh, okay. He can't.
No.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
It'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, kind of. But I think he just rehashes old nonsense. But anyway, and, you know, I mentioned Tim Scott and Mike Pence is still yet to officially announce. And so
I don't think I could be less inspired by a human being than Mike Pence. Yeah,
I tend to think that Pence is not going to run.
I don't think Mike Pence is a bad person.
Yeah, no.
I'm just so uninspired. Right. Like, he talks and I'm just saying, like, all right, is it nap time? Okay.
Yeah, right. He is. I think that he was only there in case there was never a challenge to Trump or whatever. And I think Pence drops and just gets behind DeSantis is kind of how I think it unfolds. But
ideal situation.
Yeah, listen.
Somehow Donald Trump wins the nomination and somehow Kennedy overtakes Biden. And then they have to debate the COVID vaccines with the Democrat runner being like, no, these things were terrible. And Trump being like, no, it's the best thing ever.
That. Yeah, I would love that.
My time in this simulation will be complete at that moment in time. I'd be like, thank you.
I was bringing up simulation during the Michael Block story. I'm like, this can't be fucking real. Like, this has got to be this. Then he makes an ace. Like, what? Like, this can't be real. Anyway, so, Chris Sununu, the governor of New Hampshire, is also considering a run. I feel like that's, again, a tactical move to block Trump from winning New Hampshire, right? So if Sununu can just win New Hampshire, he can just give those delegates to whoever he wants to at the end because he's not going to win anywhere else. So I think Tim Scott in South Carolina does some of that, right? So like Nikki Haley in South Carolina. So there are setting up some blocks.
Do you hear that Joy Behar said Tim Scott doesn't understand what it's like to be a black man in America?
Yeah, him and Clarence Thomas, neither. Joy Behar, she knows.
I love these people so much.
Such a clown world. So I don't know. The polling still shows Trump 40 points ahead of DeSantis. I expect there to be a bump after the announcement. I don't see how he makes up 40 points.
I don't either.
Like, again, polling is polling, right? So, like, I'm not trying to, like, it's the end-all, be-all. But it would seem like if there was movement in the polls, you would see it. It's going the other way. Like, he keeps growing. And, I mean, he gets convicted, I guess, of sexually assaulting a woman, and his poll numbers go up. So, like,
he was not convicted. I guess sexual assault. Not convicted. Liable.
Yeah.
Conviction requires a criminal. It was a civil law.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, but anyway, he's got that, you know, supposedly around his neck and nobody cares. And so I still just think it's Trump's to lose. Like, I
agree.
I don't see any of these guys, as much as we were a fan of DeSantis during COVID, I don't think it's enough to overtake Trump. Like, I just think that the base doesn't want to, like, the base thinks DeSantis was just somebody who Trump brought along, right? So it's not like they think he did anything to deserve this platform that he has or the stature that he has within the party.
Right.
They think it's all because Trump got him elected. So I don't see any Trump supporters going to DeSantis or general election voters, I guess. But, I mean, the people who were for Trump now are not going to be like, oh, DeSantis is in, I'm going to DeSantis, right? So it's only the Never Trumpers or the people who think that DeSantis is Trump, but more polished and more presentable and, you know, has all the similar policies, which I'm not sure is especially correct. And my biggest concern with DeSantis is that I think he's a neocon. I mean, he surrounded himself with the Bushes, who are known to be neocons, maybe the leader in the clubhouse of all neocon activities.
Dick Cheney would like a word with you.
I mean, somebody had to pull the strings for the Bushes, but I mean, there. So I have my skepticism about DeSantis. I'll be interested to see what he says tonight if Ukraine comes up. Because he's kind of gave one answer to Tucker when Tucker asked about their Ukraine and then kind of backtracked.
He did.
So I have my reasons to be eyeballing DeSantis with some skepticism, I guess. So I have to work tonight, so I'm going to miss this Spaces thing, but I think I'm going to watch the replay or listen to the replay just because I'm a glutton for punishment.
I don't have to work tonight, and I'm definitely not watching this.
If I text you that Trump is in there, you better go in there.
All right, then I'll check it out. You're right. That's fair. Because then
have to go to the bathroom break if I hear Trump's in there.
I just, like, I can't express to you how little I care about any of these people.
No, I don't either. That's, I know. That's all, it's I have literally no respect for any of these people. I think they're all clowns. But
you're there for the
world.
Though
literally, the world revolves around these people too, which is the saddest part. So like, to just ignore it and stick your head in the sand doesn't mean, just because you don't care about politics doesn't mean politics doesn't care about you, right? So, I'm going to point out the hypocrisy in all these people from, you know, from town council to the president. I don't care.
Just keep throwing shots.
All right. Anything else on 2024 that?
There's a part of me like, listen, I can't stand Donald Trump. I kind of want to see him go scorched earth. Like if he wins, I will be in. Because I want, like, I think he wants vengeance. And I think you're going to see, like, either he's getting whacked or you're going
to
see some.
I mentioned this to you a couple weeks ago on a show. I'm like, I've never been, and I'm still there, I've never been as close to voting for Trump as I am right now. Like, I didn't vote for him in 2016. I didn't vote for him in 2020. Like, nothing. Like, zero. Right. He's not my guy.
But he might be in 2024.
He might be in 2024. Because of all the reasons you just laid out.
I get it.
Nothing changes if DeSantis is president.
No.
Nothing changes.
That.
Nothing changes.
This is what I mean.
Trump could burn some shit down.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
And the same, this is where I like Kennedy. Like, it's the same thing of same like, thing. This guy, even if you think he's nuts, the policies that he is espousing, I am so firmly on board with.
And you know, he firmly believes the CIA killed his dad and his uncle. So he's scorched earth guy by default.
Yeah, like you're not letting that agency stay intact if you finally get into a position where you can undo it.
Zero chance. He is dissolving agencies.
Oh.
1,000 pieces or whatever it was and scattered to the winds, as the JFK said. Yeah. I hope that happens.
You and I both.
All right. Mr. Huson, would you like to leave the folks with anything on an upbeat note as opposed to, you know, what we talked about in the last hour and so.
Yeah, right. touch grass.
Other than Michael Block was the heartwarming story of
Michael Block was great.
Right, great story.
Enjoy the good moments.
Yeah. All right. On that note, I thank you all for tuning in for another episode of Sports Clicks and Politics. Plan is we'll be here. Oh, wait. We're not going to do a Memorial Day show. Probably not.
Nah.
So whatever it is, the 4th, 3rd, whatever the, Monday is after Memorial Day, we'll see you all then. And until then, again, touch grass.